D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan, live at Mellow Mushroom on Broadway. Willie Donick in Southern California. Also in Southern California, our next guest, Predators television analyst Chris Mason. Chris, the NHL trade deadline has come and gone. The Predators made three moves, trading Gus Nyquist for a second-round draft pick, trading Mark Jankowski for a fifth-round draft pick, and most notably trading Tommy Novak and Luke Shen for Michael Bunting and a fourth-round draft pick. Your analysis of what Barry Trotz did at the NHL trade deadline.
I think I was like, you know, everybody else. I was kind of waiting on Twitter. All the deals are going down and you're seeing all these big moves and the return that everybody's getting. And I was the same. I was like, okay, well, what are the Preds going to do? They've obviously got some pieces. And, you know, throughout that day, you keep waiting and waiting and you're seeing guys getting moved left and right. And I think the deals that he made were fine. And obviously in retrospect, you look back at, you know, the situation with Shen getting, you know, moved as part of that package with Tommy Novak and the fourth round pick, and you get Bunting back. You know, so that's one of those ones where you look at after the fact. But, you know, after hearing Trotz explain, you know, what his plan was going, that's why I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of these situations and to see what the process is, that he set values for certain guys, you know, like Colton Sissons, Michael McCarron, Ryan O'Reilly, guys you don't really want to lose, guys that are good culture guys, guys that are, for their production and value to your team, are under really good contracts. You know, if you trade those guys, you get some assets, you get some draft picks, you're going to have to replace them in the summer, and you're probably going to have to pay more, you know, for the exact same type of player, and you never know what you're going to get. And they targeted Bunting. You know, that's an element that he felt that he really you know, wanted to get. And I really feel this team, you know, needs a lot more of it, to be a little harder to play against, a little more sandpaper, a little more, you know, grind in their game. And Bunting's that player. We'll see. He should hopefully be back here in the next week or two. You know, the one for Gus Nyquist, obviously, I think, he was having a tough year. You were able to get a second round pick for him. And I think they were able to do that because they used a retention spot, which kept, those are so valuable. And I think a lot of times, you know, people, when you're analyzing a trade, you overlook the value of how important having a salary retention spot and using that, you know, increases what you get. So a second round on that one I thought was good. But it was quiet. It was a lot more quiet than I expected. But, you still have guys that you know, we're rumored to be trading that are still under contract for another year. So if a similar situation ends up next year, you can still, you know, move those players and probably get similar value. So a little more quiet than I thought it was going to be. But, you know, after hearing him talk, I kind of see the rationale on it.
So there was a time not too long ago where Steven Stamkos could not buy a point. He went 13 consecutive games without a point, the longest drought of his Hall of Fame career. Now, all of a sudden, Steven Stamkos can't stop scoring. If my math is right, 9 points in his past four games, 5 goals, 4 assists. What have you seen from Stamkos over the past four games that maybe was missing in the previous 13?
I just think he's finally kind of accepted, you know, everything. You know, I think a lot of times people really underestimate, and this, it changes from player to player, the impact of being moved to a new situation. I think at first there's obviously a level of disappointment because, you know, he wanted to stay in Tampa Bay. He's been there. That's a player that quite honestly should be a lifer in a team. You know, you should never have ever seen Steven Stamkos in another jersey, in my opinion. And I think at first, once you kind of get over that, there's a level of excitement and adrenaline. I'm going to a new team, Nashville. These are great guys and, you know, all these things. And this is a guy that is, you know, used to winning and trying to compete for a Stanley Cup every single year. And you think you're going to come into, you know, a similar situation with all the additions and the year that they had last year. And it was a horrific start for everybody. You know, he's trying to learn a new system. He's trying to play with, you know, he's played with the same guys for the last decade, pretty much been on the same power play where you don't even really have to think. You just go out there and, you know, you've got success and you know your line mates and your personnel, and it's just, you know, tweaking things. And this was a complete shock to the system, I think. And, you know, I know from being traded, and I was never in a place, you know, as long as Stamkos was. And it takes a long time. And I think, you know, eventually you do get over it, and you do kind of accept what the situation is, and you start to embrace that. And I feel, you know, he just had to give in. They're not going to win this year. It's been a terrible, you know, year all around in terms of what the expectations to the actual situation. I just think he's going on and he's having fun. And I think that's the biggest challenge for these guys, is to go out there and kind of play free of the disappointment and that internal pressure that, you know, every game and every time you look at the stand, he's like, geez, how did we end up here? And now I just think he's just going out there, he's playing, he's having fun. And obviously now we're seeing, you know, the world-class Hall of Fame skill set from Stamkos every night.
Talking to Chris Mason, doing a segment on the Predators here as they have won four straight games out in California, and next will be in action on Friday night against the Ducks. So, Mace, let's wade through what we're seeing here. They've won four in a row. It's all against non-playoff teams, so you have to gauge that. But one thing I'm noticing as they are where they are, and they've now moved on from Tommy Novak, Stamkos, you could argue, is benefiting from playing with Ryan O'Reilly, and this is why it was so important to hang on to O'Reilly. But it shows you the importance of having that other center that helps drive. It seems like whoever is not playing with O'Reilly has trouble getting a lot. Colton Sissons is doing an admirable job. You can put him anywhere, but I think everybody would agree he's not cut out to be a number two center. You can play him there, and he'll work hard for you, but they've got to find another solution there. Fedor Svechkov, in the meantime, has had some little flickers here. He's made some really nice plays the last couple of games. So as you look at what they've got, it definitely looks like they've got to try to find another solution there for next year. But in the meantime, this is a great opportunity for Svechkov to sort of to try to maybe grab the reins. But he's so young.
Yeah, I think he's taken some big strides. And like any young player, he's 21 years old. He came in, you know, playing third and fourth line, started really to see some of the tools he possesses. And then he dipped. I think it was a good thing that I think they tried him up on the second line and, you know, gave him a look at what it's like playing against, you know, either the opponent's first or second line. It's different. You know, you've got a lot more defensive responsibility. It gets harder to win faceoffs. You're playing more minutes. You're playing heavier minutes. You're defending more. The margin for error is a lot less when you're playing against those top guys. And he struggled. You know, he had a dip in that. But you don't know, you know, as a player, and that's how you get experience. Is, you know, they're doing a good job of putting these young kids now in situations that maybe, you know, if they're in a playoff race, they probably wouldn't. And I think it's going to help their development in the long term, because once you see it and once you kind of feel it, get the timing, you kind of say, okay, you know, that's a little different. You know, I've been doing okay here. I've been making some strides, but that's a different level now. And so he understands of different things that he has to do or change in his game to maybe get back up there. And he seems like a really smart, intelligent player. You know, for a young player, he's really responsible defensively. He's strong on the puck. And now I think, you know, he's back on a third line situation. You're starting to see confidence in his 5-on-5 game. And then now on the second, you know, he's on that second unit or first unit at times on the power play. And he's driving the play. He's attacking the middle of the ice. He's carrying the puck. He's holding on to it. You know, he's garnering a lot of coverage. Obviously, the Stamkos overtime goal was such a great play by him. You know, he completely opened Stamkos up with the way that he telegraphed his pass there. And, you know, you're starting to see and maybe have a better idea of projecting what Svechkov could be. But I think you're right. I think all the wingers, especially all the skill guys, they all want to play with O'Reilly because, you know, he drives that line, and maybe he's, you know, on a top team, he's a second-line centerman. And I think that's a big, you know, need for the Predators, just to get one more of those guys so you have a 1-2 punch at center ice, and then you talk about having, you know, more layered attack offensively. I think that's going to increase your chances of having, you know, two really good top lines instead of one. You know, that's the main line of offense, or having to split certain guys up to try to balance it out. That's a big need. I think we've known that for a long time, that, you know, a big, hopefully a young centerman, you know, is in the works, and that's something they can address in the offseason.
Yeah, so hard to find, just like the quarterback in football. It's hard to find that number one center. So, Mace, another example last night of the attention to detail defensively is still lacking for the Predators. They gave up a bunch, and UC Soros had to be a lot better than people might realize. If you didn't watch the game, you say, well, they beat the Sharks. What's the big deal? But the Sharks have some really high-end young talent, and they are throwing caution to the wind, and Nashville was exploited there. And I do think that's something that Barry Trotz has to be looking for in the big picture, is they've got to defend better, and they've got to find some guys who don't get lost as much. There's still too many times in a game where a guy is uncovered in the slot.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things I didn't like last night's game for that reason, because I thought they'd done the three prior games, I thought they'd done a lot better job in Boston. I thought they were good in Seattle, but last night it kind of went off the rails. And I think, you know, a lot of the talk out of the room and from Brunette and Trotz is trying to find that identity moving forward. And one of the things they want to do is be hard to play against. And, you know, when you hear teams say that, it starts with defense. It starts with, okay, you're playing against world-class talent every single night. They're probably going to get some looks. You know, they're going to get some power play. They might get the odd, you know, five-on-five chance. But it's just way too much free, uncontested chances given up. And that's detail. That's all five guys that are not as committed as they should be in those situations. And I understand the mental challenge of, you know, getting up for some of these games. You know, depending on the night and the opponent, you know, that could have a lot to do with where your head's at. And I think defensively, you know, they just thought they could go out and maybe play at 75% and win that hockey game. And they did. You know, they scored a couple power play goals. They were hanging on in the third period. They only got four shots, and, you know, they were able to kind of get that final goal. But, you know, that's not a game I would look at and say, you know, go back to the room and say, guys, great job, we played great, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's not what the plan is. You know, that was a team that, in my opinion, was not hard to play against. It was kind of a pond hockey game of a couple teams that are at the bottom of the league, you know, which they are, that were just going out there and see what happens, and they were able to obviously win that one. But they got to clean up a lot on the defensive side, because there's just way too much free offense.
Mace, well, before we let you go, I know Barry Trotz had some comments with Jared about where Roman Josi is right now in his week-to-week situation. And Barry Trotz, you know, he was very careful in what he was saying, but it does look like with where the team is right now, they're going to be very, very careful on how to proceed with him.
Yeah, and I think you should. I mean, really, what's the point, or what's the benefit of, you know, you're not going to bring him back early. You know, you might get a situation where, you know, Yossi's 100% healthy, and then maybe, you know, you take an extra week or so and he wants to come back. And I don't know, you know, that exact situation or timeline or how Yossi's doing right now. But, I mean, you know, there's no real upside or point to having him get back, and you know, and then you get a chance to look at other guys as well. And you know, when you're talking about, you know, injury to your franchise player, you know, I just don't see, you know, any real benefit. You know, it's not about winning hockey games right now. Quite honestly, it'd probably benefit the Predators more if they didn't have a winning record the rest of the way, and they were able to you know, finish lower and be in the lottery with a higher percentage of chance of getting a better pick. So I think they're going to be extremely careful and cautious with Roman Josi, as they should be.
Chris Mason, Predators television analyst, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donna. Chris, great stuff as always. Enjoy California. We'll talk next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You as well. Chris Mason joining us on the program. The Predators are back in action on Friday. Another late puck drop against the Anaheim Ducks. 615-737-1025. A quick SEC tournament score update. The Arkansas Razorbacks, I should say, have opened a 19-point lead, 57-38, with roughly 15 minutes to go in the second half against the South Carolina Gamecocks. Of course, assuming Arkansas.
Who would they play?
Arkansas, I was just about to tell you that. Arkansas would advance to play Ole Miss in the opening game of the tournament tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. So Arkansas,
opportunity for Arkansas. I really do think that they're playing pretty well. They feel pretty confident. That will be an interesting game, I think, to watch, because I think they match up well with Ole Miss. I think that will be a great one. And one other game that I've been keeping my eye on here, just because if you are an SEC fan and you're saying, okay, how many are they going to get in? Is it 12, 13, 14? Other teams on the bubble that really have to win to stay alive. One of them
bid
is Cincinnati.
Bid Steelers.
One of them is Cincinnati. They absolutely have to win, and they right now are behind and having trouble with Iowa State. It's not over. Cincinnati's battling, but Iowa State has had control of the game, I would say, for most of the way. It's 65-56 right now at the under four timeout.
So 57-43 Arkansas against South Carolina in the second half. If Arkansas holds on, which I assume it will, they will face Ole Miss in the first matchup tomorrow in the second round of the SEC tournament. 615-737-1025. Catch me at Mellow Mushroom for the next 40 minutes. Jared Stillman will be.
Check out Adam's hat. Check out Adam's hat. Now, what happened with the hat, Adam? I heard you forgot to bring a hat, so you had to be resourceful.
So Sean Mark, our on-site engineer, offered me his MTSU hat because I was actually en route to the studio to record tonight's edition of Predators Insiders, which you can hear after the Vanderbilt game. And I was on my way over to the studio this morning when Chase let us know we would be outside on this beautiful day. So I forgot my hat. So thank you to Sean for helping me out in a pinch as I represent the Blue Raiders during the program.
True blue.
615-737-1025. Again, I am out at Mellow Mushroom. Jared Stillman will be here as well.
Blue Raiders are still alive in their tournament.
Darn right.
They play tomorrow, if I recall correctly, against Louisiana Tech to start their conference tournament. If you come out to Mellow Mushroom, $5 Miller High Life specials, $5 Sangria, $5 Dolce Vita tequila, and all week long, if you bring your SEC tournament ticket, you will get 10% off your bill. So come have some delicious pizza, some delicious food, some wonderful beverages right next door to Bridgestone Arena. 615-737-1025. Some breaking news around the NFL. A potpourri, if you will. We will get to that next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Adam Vingan. California girl Willie Donick? Is that what you were going for, David James?
Of course.
All right, see? I'm up on my popular music. Willie Donick, of course, out in California with the Nashville Predators. We just spoke to Chris Mason. The Predators are back in action on Friday against the Anaheim Ducks. I am live at Mellow Mushroom right across the street. Again, right next door to Bridgestone Arena. We will be right across the street from Bridgestone Arena tomorrow at Assembly Food Hall from 9 to 6. Chase and Big Joe, myself, Willie, and hopefully Derek. He is still under the weather. And, of course, Jared Stillman live at Assembly Food Hall tomorrow, the pub in the Gulch on Friday. Also want to let everybody know that it's St. Patrick's Day weekend and we are celebrating in East Nashville. Come out and join me. I'll be out there in 102.5 The Game in 5 points for the official Nashville St. Patrick's Day Parade presented by Aer Lingus, kicking off at 10 a.m. on Saturday. Live Irish music, drink specials, and family fun all day long. And 102.5 The Game will be on site from 9 to 11 with swag to give away. And you can sign up for a chance to win concert tickets. I've already asked my 3.5-year-old son, Arlo, if he wants to go to the parade. He says yes. So you can also meet Arlo, which is a very important part of coming out to the parade.
Very nice.
So be sure to do that. So, Willie, a couple of news and notes around the NFL. During our conversation with Chris Mason, it is official, or close to official, because it's been reported. The team itself has not said it. But the Rams have informed Cooper Kupp that they are releasing him today. So you can throw Cooper Kupp now into the bin. Cooper Kupp is 31, has missed time the past three seasons, but now he is a free agent. Teams clearly were not willing to give up compensation for the contract that he had signed with the Rams, so that contract has been voided, and now he will head off to free agency. So Cooper Kupp, officially throw him into the bin. Also another piece of news for you out there hoping that Marcus Mariota may return to Nashville. That is not happening. He is re-signing with the Washington Commanders on a one-year, $8 million deal per multiple reports.
I think that's a good spot for him. I think he is a really good backup to have if you're Washington. Washington's made some really bold moves to try to jump up and take the next step. And I think Mariota is a guy that we mentioned Carson Wentz, if and when he signs with another team, will be six teams in 6 years. Mariota's pretty close, right? So he's bounced around.
He's played
with a lot of teams. So I think he's probably content to be the guy to back up Jaden Daniels. And his skill set, you know, is one where if Jaden Daniels goes down, I think, you know, he's got some of the same traits, and he's comfortable in that offense. But let's get back to the bin for a second here, Adam.
All right,
let's
do it.
That's the theme. The wide receiver bin is got a lot of names in there. The quarterback bin, on the other hand, there's not very many things in the bin right now, right? A lot of quarterbacks have signed. You just mentioned Mariota. But wide receivers, I think that the market is changing. And now you throw Cooper Kupp in there. And so what is the going rate? What is the price on the bin when you look through these guys and you see Keenan Allen, Stephon Diggs, Amari Cooper, Cooper Kupp, and there's more, right? There's a lot of them in there. So I'm guessing the Titans will be searching through that bin. The question is, what are you willing to pay, and who's the right guy?
And one of those secondary options, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, reportedly has signed with the Seahawks. The Seahawks need receivers because they let go of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Valdes-Scantling was a midseason pickup by the Saints because the Saints needed receivers, and he has parlayed that into a contract with the Seahawks. So you can cross MVS off that list as well.
Okay, so we have a sale. He's out of the bin. He's got a new team.
If we're using the you know the video store metaphor here, you know the receivers are left. You know, their cases are a little scuffed. There might be a tear in the jacket. Yeah. There might be a tear in the jacket. There might be a scratch on the disc, so you can't use the special features that you want to watch. That's kind of what we're left with
among the
wide receivers.
The worst would be at your favorite part of the movie, it skips or it gets jammed. That was the worst thing. Like, all of a sudden it froze at the big part of the movie. You're like, oh, I got to see what happens. And then, oh, no, it's locked up. It overheats. I don't know what things would happen there, but it is a group of players that are probably past their prime. And Jonathan Hutton had a good term for some of these guys. They have been the alpha, you know, 120 targets, you know, year in, year out for a long stretch, and now probably past that stage. So who can adapt? Who can be a person that is not the diva, quote unquote, right, that is constantly going, you know, why haven't I gotten my 10 targets this week? DeAndre Hopkins has now gone through that phase of his career. He's at a different stage. We saw it with Odell Beckham Jr., right? He's still kicking around somewhere out there. So which of these guys can adapt? The Titans have a big need at wide receiver, and they probably don't want to overpay. So who's the right guy?
It is funny how quickly things can change in this league. Remember how celebrated the acquisition of Stephon Diggs was with the Houston Texans just last year, right? And now a year later,
he's not that far removed from being an alpha, right? It started to fade a little bit, and then it changed last year. But he's not that far removed from being a guy that got it like 160 times a year.
Right. I know his season ended because of injury last season, a torn ACL, if I'm not mistaken. But it's funny how quickly things change. I mean, the Texans gave up a significant amount of assets, if I'm not mistaken, to acquire Stephon Diggs from the Buffalo Bills. And now, you know, days into the legal tampering period, he's still out there. So you're right. You know, and this would be a great topic for Derek. Hopefully he can rejoin us tomorrow. Just how you had changed that mentality when you're used to being the top dog and now you're no longer leading the pack. I'm mixing animal metaphors here. I went from a dog to a wolf, but you know what I'm saying. West and Hermitage.
Yeah. That's kind of the center of the topic, right? The dog, it becomes like a call. He gets the call to the wild.
Yes, I suppose that is true. Wes in Hermitage on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, says, how can the Titans say we want to be a draft, develop, and retain team? I'm not buying that anymore. You don't let NWI, Landry, and Stonehouse walk if you are using that forum. It makes no sense. now not signing a quarterback? Has Brinker convinced Borgonzi that we need to tank this year so they can push out Callahan and go get their guy? Seems like it's a sabotage, in my opinion. I don't blame NWI, honestly. He's seen it all and wants no part of this organization. It's a bad look.
Well, when you have the first pick, things aren't good. So I think that these types of things happen more often with a team that's struggling. It's not a culture where everybody around the league is saying, boy, I wish I could get there. You know, let's take the Predators. I think they went from a team about 10 or 12 years ago of a – they're not going to spend to the cap. And I think of a Ryan Suter when he left for free agency. I think he was, are the Predators really committed? Are they going to be a team that can spend to the cap and try to win a championship? They had, famously, Jason Spezza had them on a no-trade list, right? They made
yes.
a trade for Jason Spezza, but it was voided because he was able to veto the trade because he had them on a list of cities he didn't want to go play for. But then it turned into what they were famously calling the destination city. I think it's got a lot of appeal right now. Now what happens after they have a bad year, right? You can't go up and down. I think the Titans have a similar pathway. Right now they're kind of in that franchise bin. We're overusing bin now. We're dangerously close to having to ban that phrase. But right now
Basket.
They're probably on the list of teams like, hey, do they have their act together? Is this franchise one I want to go play for?
That is a good question, and I'm curious what the sales pitch would be for some of these free agents. Let's just say, for the purpose of this conversation, that Mike Borgonzi is on the phone with Stefon Diggs' agent. What are you saying if you're Mike Borgonzi? Look, we're a team. We hope to be on the rise sooner rather than later. We have the number one overall pick in the draft. It could be a young, exciting quarterback. We need a veteran receiver, a sure-handed receiver, to help him along. What would be your pitch to these receivers in the bin slash basket slash whatever you want to call it if you're the Titans?
That's a great question, because if you're a receiver and you're looking at Nashville and you don't know who their quarterback is, unless Borgonzi or whoever's recruiting is going to tell them who the quarterback is, which I don't think that would be smart, then what do you do? Like, how do you sell it? Do you just have to wait until you select your quarterback before you can really make a good pitch to these wide receivers? Or the other option, I think, would just be to put more money out there than anybody else is and have that be the thing. Say, look, we're going to figure out the quarterback, but here's more money than you're going to make elsewhere.
A quick update, SEC tournament action. South Carolina making it interesting. Across the street, next door, wherever the heck. 61-50 Arkansas now. South Carolina has cut the deficit to 11, roughly halfway through the second half.
And
it is now a 9-point lead, 61-52. South Carolina having outscored Arkansas by 8 points in the second half. So things getting a little interesting next door at Bridgestone Arena. Arkansas, a 61-52 lead against South Carolina. A 17-point halftime lead has been whittled down to single digits. 615-737-1025. Speaking of the SEC tournament, right after our program, Vanderbilt will take the court at Bridgestone Arena against the Texas Longhorns. We will look ahead to that matchup and more. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick here with you. I am live at Mellow Mushroom next door to Bridgestone Arena, host of the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. We will be on the road for the remainder of the week. We are at Mellow Mushroom today, again next door to Bridgestone Arena. Come on out. $5 Miller High Life, $5 Sangria, $5 Dolce Vita Tequila. All week long, if you have an SEC Tournament ticket, you will get 10% off of your bill. So make sure to check out Mellow Mushroom. We will be live across the street, just a stone's throw away from Mellow Mushroom tomorrow at Assembly Food Hall. We will be at the pub in the Gulch on Friday, just a short walk from Bridgestone Arena. A score update in the SEC at the under 8. Arkansas 61, South Carolina 53. South Carolina on a bit of a run here, down 17 at the half. They have cut it to 8, making things interesting right next door for Arkansas. I would say Arkansas is, I would say, fairly safe, Willie, but I think they need to notch this win just to make sure that they have a reason to watch Selection Sunday.
Yeah, this wouldn't help. And South Carolina is on a good run now. It's 61-54. They've missed a couple of free throws, and they had some getting fouled, and the ball's bouncing around the rim for an and one. It didn't go in, so South Carolina is chipping away. They're playing with a lot of passion right now for a team that has no shot at postseason. So I give the Gamecocks credit here. Arkansas, I think, still should be in good shape unless they completely collapse, but there's still a lot of time left. Arkansas, I think, will be all right even if they lose, but you just don't want to put yourself at the mercy of the committee. And if some crazy things happen, South Carolina just missed a layup that would have cut it to 5. So South Carolina still is on a run here, and they've got some momentum. But, yeah, I think some other teams would have to make a run. I think the ACC is interesting because they're so top-heavy. Mm-hmm. If somebody beats Duke and opens up the draw for a North Carolina or a Wake Forest or a team like that that probably needs a deep run, if not to win it, that could hurt a bubble team like Arkansas if they were to lose this game. Arkansas probably doesn't gain much by winning this game, but they give themselves a chance to get another quality win if they can get a shot at Ole Miss tomorrow and beat them.
So Arkansas still on top of South Carolina. Assuming Arkansas wins, they will face Ole Miss tomorrow in the first game of the second round at noon at Bridgestone Arena. Coming up right after our program, Vanderbilt will be in action against Texas. The pregame show starts right after we come off the air. Tip-off scheduled for 2:30. The winner of this game, Texas and Vanderbilt, will advance to play Texas A&M tomorrow at roughly the same time, 2:30 at Bridgestone Arena. Willie, after Vanderbilt's winning streak, we all declared they're in. They're a lock. And then they lost to Arkansas, and they lost to Georgia. And I believe their bubble percentage odds on Bubble Watch on the ESPN are at 75% now, so it's taken a hit over these past two games. Same thing with Arkansas, as you said, Billy. I would say with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's probably in, but you do not want to leave yourself at the mercy of the selection committee, so take care of business against a Texas team that absolutely needs to go on a run, I think, to make the NCAA tournament.
I think Vanderbilt is further up on the bubble. They're higher on the ladder than Arkansas.
Yes, I would agree with that.
So I think Vanderbilt could lose and still be okay. A lot would have to happen for Vanderbilt not to get in. But, of course, all Vanderbilt fans have been scarred a few times over their history of being that team that you think your name's going to get called, and then, you know, the brackets are announced and you're not in there. It's a bad, bad feeling. So everybody's having a flashback to that. I think they're okay. But when you say take care of business against Texas, I think this is an absolute coin flip of a game. Texas is talented. They're not playing really well, Texas. They've got Trey Johnson, who is, by everybody's assessment, a lottery pick. He can take over a game. He can get you 32. He can get you 39, as he had a couple weeks ago. But he really struggled in the last game, a game that was a big bubble game for them. He had zero field goals in the game, which is shocking. His only points came from the free throw line. They held him to 7. So what does he come back with? I don't think that's going to happen again. He's a guy that can get his shot anytime he wants. He's 6'6". You can't do much about it. If he wants to shoot, he's going to shoot. It's all about, for him, efficiency. And I mean, if you're guarding him, you've got to make him work for the points. You got to hope he takes some bad shots. Vanderbilt did a pretty decent job on him at Memorial Gym when they beat Texas a couple of weeks ago. And for Vanderbilt, I'm looking at A.J. Hogard, who has been very up and down the stretch. You show me a game where A.J. Hogard is making good decisions, strong drives to the rim, hitting the open man, knocking down the open three when he's open. And Hogard right now is at 28% from three, right? He can go ice cold. He did not have a good game at all at Georgia. They need the good A.J. Hogard from now until the end of the season. That will be an important thing for Vanderbilt. They also had two guys miss the game against Georgia that are not big-time players, but they're key role players, Grant Huffman and, even more importantly, M.J. Collins. They both were out against Georgia. That didn't help them, especially down the stretch when Georgia – you know, had all the momentum, playing in front of a home crowd, and they just drove it to the finish line. So let's see what Vanderbilt can come back with today against Texas. I do think they have a coaching edge in this game. I don't think Texas is super well coached, but they have a lot of talent. Intriguing game. I think it could go either way, but I want to see Vanderbilt bounce back with the type of effort that got them those wins against Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Missouri. But as we've talked about all year long, they've had to overachieve. They need everything in order to win. A less than great effort makes them probably beatable by just about any team, any good team in the country, because they just don't have that great superstar talent that can just rise everybody up. They can't roll the ball out there. It's got to be everybody cohesive.
We have a one possession game. Next door, 61-58 Arkansas against South Carolina.
Ice cold. This game should be closer. South Carolina has missed two or three layups here, or they could be in the lead in this game. Arkansas has hit a wall.
Arkansas just took a timeout. 4:47 remaining in the game. 61-58. South Carolina outscoring Arkansas by 14 points in the second half. The winner of this game will advance to face Ole Miss in the second round opener tomorrow at noon at Bridgestone Arena. Vanderbilt will face Texas coming up right after our program. The winner would take on Texas A&M on Thursday. In the nightcap, LSU and Mississippi State. Winner faces Missouri, Oklahoma, and Georgia in the late game. Winner takes on Kentucky. So make sure to tune in for all of your SEC tournament updates. We will be back on the road tomorrow. We will be at Assembly Food Hall right across the street over here from Bridgestone Arena. Come see us. We will be broadcasting live starting at 9 with Chase and Big Joe. I will be out there. Jerry will be out there as well. But coming up next, the pregame show. Vanderbilt preparing to open the SEC tournament against Texas. Pregame show coming up next, followed by tip-off at 2:30. That'll do it for us today. On behalf of Derek Mason, be love on your people. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Peace.